IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Phil.
And I'm Crystal.
And this week, we are joined by the CAFTCAD 2021 Nobis Industry Icon Award recipient and Primetime Emmy nominee with an extensive list of credits to their name.
Credits such as Operation Christmas Drop, Outlander, Battlestar Galactica, and the Calgary Winter Olympic opening ceremonies, to name only a few.
It's such a privilege to get to know veteran member of the costume department, Glenn Campbell. So pull up an Apple Box and let's talk. Welcome, Glenn, to our very first podcast. We're thrilled to have you on this, so let's get right into it. First off, I love your motto, keep the drama in front of the lens. That's not always easy to achieve, is it? But great advice for people starting out. How long have you been in costumes, and what was the beginning of your interest in film and television?
Hi, Phil.
Hi,
Crystal.
Hi.
Thank you for having me on.
And thank you for being here.
Yeah, great opportunity to promote costuming. And thank you for the keep the drama in front of the camera, because, you know.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been doing costuming for years. I think probably a lot longer than three people in this room have been on the planet, is how I like to answer that question. I started very, very early in that I learned to sew when I was in elementary school. Hence, I was making Halloween costumes and figure skating costumes and dance costumes for all my friends when I was in junior high school. So it went from there.
Wow. That's, you know, I remember back in my high school days where we had home economics is what they called the courses, and everybody had to learn how to sew. And it wasn't a matter of, you know, your mother wouldn't just go out and buy you a new outfit. You had to fix the one you had.
Yeah, I failed home economics. Yeah. We were assigned to go take our blouse home that we were supposed to sew and sew the shoulder seams before the next class. And I just went home and whipped the blouse together. And my teacher did not believe that I had made the blouse. She accused me of having my mother do it for me. And so that was a, you know, that was an unfortunate experience, which I'm sure I gleaned a little bit of a rebellion attitude at that point.
So you started with sewing and with stitching, and then you started making costumes. But how did you make the transition into film and television? Was there did you get a call from somebody or what?
Well, right after high school, I went directly into theater,
right?
Regional theater, which I think still to this day is a fabulous training ground for anybody who wants to go into film and television. As well, it's a great networking place.
Right.
So it was Scott Dobie. You may remember Scott Dobie, who was an art director.
The name
He's
is very
passed
familiar.
On now.
Right.
But it was him who called me and said, hey, I've got this television series. Can you come and do it?
Do you remember the name?
I sure do. Stony Plain.
Oh, there you
in
go.
In Alberta.
Wow.
And, you know, hi, everybody that's from Stony Plain days. We had a blast.
Wow.
It was really fun. And, you know, it was probably about 1980. So we were really figuring it all out at that point in time, because we a lot of us had come out of the theater background.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Well, my background's theater as well. And I remember the transition into film and television. It was, I would shake my head all the time and go, well, I don't understand. We had it working so well in theater, and now we're trying to figure out how to remake it. So did you have a lot of that tension too, where the stuff that you learned, you had to modify and adapt for film and TV, or were you breaking new ground?
I'm a really early adapter and a little bit of an innovator, because I was also getting very involved in the aviation world at that point in time too.
Right.
So film and television was really an easy step.
So on that note then, so you mentioned aviation. So how does that world, we're looking for people with transferable skills to enter our industry. And so anyone who's listening to this, who knows nothing about the film industry, but may have some transferable skills, can you speak to maybe how any of those skills transferred over into maybe your design inspirations or anything like that?
Sure. My case was very unique. In that, having just come out of the theater world, where I've learned to work with every period going, all kinds of fabrics, I was taking a break from theater, and I was working with a buddy, and we were making King Queen leather motorcycle seats for Harleys.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And the phone rang one day, and it was a fellow who was about to make, to build an aircraft. And he called us. He heard that we were the best leather workers, so could we make seats for his aircraft? So we hopped on the bike, and we went over to see what this guy was up to. And, you know, I took it all in, and I walked into one room, which had bolts and bolts and bolts of various fiberglass cloth. And so I started asking the fellow very pertinent questions about the different weaves, the different weights, the different materials within this fiberglass. And he said, "Who are you?" I said, "Well, I come from a theater costuming background and I understand fabric." And so long story short, next thing I knew, I was building an all-composite aircraft with him. And we took every Grand Champion competition in North America, including Oshkosh. Wow. And we became an item. And we were together for almost 25 years till he passed away. Oh. But we did air shows all over North America. So all of this was happening as I was transitioning to film and theater too. So I was getting a very broad aspect of innovation and technical matters. And so any skill set can be transferable if you learn to look at the big picture in part of your problem solving and stay calm, you know, because you don't want to crash and burn. So that to me, nothing to do with all the fiberglass cloths and all that, but that was the biggest takeaway I had from the aviation industry. And of course, doing air shows, you're working with pilots and schedules. They're special events. So it's just like what we're doing in the film industry every single day is a special event, basically. Mm-hmm. Hope that helps.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic.
That's a fantastic answer, because I truly think that the people that succeed the most in this actually step back and see things from the upper levels and don't get fussed with the details, because you can work out the details.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you transfer the knowledge of the aircraft fabrics and all of that? Did that work when you were working on Battlestar Galactica? Is there like a practical application from working on leather seats on a motorcycle to designing something?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and I have to chuckle, and I'm going to say hello, Richard Hudolin. I came onto Battlestar just after having the rug pulled out under my feet of my husband passing away. And so I was very shy and, you know, really sitting back. And we'd have production meetings, and all the guys would go on at great length about the various aircraft that were being created and visual effects in the show, and then the dialogue that would go with it. And I was so shy and kind of feeling very undermined in life at that point in time. I would slide little yellow sticky notes across to Richard, and I would say, "That's not how it works." And then he'd write on it, and he'd slide it back to me and say, "It's just pretend." So, you know, I guess just, your imagination, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's magic. That's what we're making, right?
Absolutely. It's
magic.
It's all magic.
And when you're imagining space and all of that, you can do whatever you want, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why people don't really understand what we do, because there's magic to absolutely every single department. And so we're trying to help demystify sort of the day-to-day of what a costume designer does. So we understand that people have understandings that are completely different, perhaps, than what it is you might do. So can you explain what exactly it is a costume designer does?
Yeah, certainly. Costume designers involved with a lot of aspects of creation of the story. You know, everything from reading the script and doing the breakdown, you're all of a sudden involved with every other department in creating that costume, because you need to know what the writers mean. You need to know what the director's vision is. You need to know what the producer's budget is. You need to know what size of a prop the props department is thinking about that has to be hidden in the costume. You need to know what the set deck colors are so that you're not creating a floating head against the set. You need to know what the camera department, you know, heavens, how many reiterations of cameras have we gone through over the years? The lighting department, when the Dave credits first came out and we shot Blood and Chrome and the whole studio was all green screen. And the only thing real was the costumes and the hand props. So, you know, was it predictable? No, we were just all doing experimental filmmaking at that point in time. You need to know what the talent, on-screen talents, likes, abilities, sizes, and all of that are. And you need to know what your crew is capable of. And if you have time to bring them along and instruct them as you're meeting the demands of the producers. So the
costumes tell a large part of the story, right? I mean, everybody chooses to wear costumes in certain ways. So your job as a costume designer, is it to actually inform that story that's being told by the costume? Do you actually interpret and break down the script to get to that?
Yes, absolutely. The costumes are telling part of the story. And in effect, you see the costume before the actor or actress opens their mouth.
Right.
So you've already told part of the story there. And, you know, we humans are getting sharper and sharper every generation. So you have to really give them information within that storyline, the visual story.
Is that one of the toughest part of the jobs, is being in a leadership role like that, to make sure that you're pulling everybody along on the same path and that everybody's working together?
Yeah, it's a huge part of the day, absolutely. And, man, the number of footsteps I've taken around the studios here just to oversee that everybody is in step and understanding what they're doing. You know, it's quite fascinating because when you do some big shows, and I'll use Battlestar as an instance, it's not just about the day that you're filming and the film product. It's about the auction of goods afterwards.
Ah, yes.
And so I have pretty high expectations of the department to do the best job they can when they're constructing something or they're breaking something down, because those costumes can become archival materials and they can sell for a lot of money. So if we want Vancouver to look like a good labor force, we need to have really excellent skill sets. And I know it's tricky because town gets busy and you're literally pulling in breathing bodies, right?
Yeah. So you're putting a crew together, let's just say you're putting a crew together today or tomorrow. What are you looking for in your team?
Well, key would be the word proven. Experience, proven skills. You know, I want to know that what they say they are doing, they are actually capable of and have done. You know, we've got the list of costume roles within the department, which changes you know, it moves along as we need to. Of course, I'm looking for assistants. I'm looking for administrators. I'm looking for creative people. I'm looking for good PR people, because we are a big part of the PR of the machine. Mm-hmm. We're a huge part of the PR of the machine. Not only with the producers and directors and talent and all the other heads of department that we have to deal with, but when we go out in the world there and we need, you know, something yesterday, we have to have a very good public relationship with our suppliers. Mm-hmm. So,
A lot of soft skills in that, as well as the technical abilities.
Huge soft skills. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you find that there's always room for mentorship? And, the way I started in the industry, it was always the older generation passing on the knowledge and making sure the people coming in were equipped. Do you find that that's a large part of what you do as well?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a huge part. And, I've met some wonderful young people and seen them blossom. So it's really cool to challenge people and then see them get excited about what they've learned and accomplished that day. So absolutely.
So then your journey from starting out in theater all the way to winning the Nobis Award from CAFTCAD, which congratulations on that again.
Yes, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
We're proud sponsors of the CAFTCAD Awards and really involved and really support it.
So, excellent. Yeah. Thank you.
And so... You know, outside of that, could you pinpoint what was kind of the most standout moment of your career?
Oh, jeepers. Let me think about that. Is this time for a commercial break?
It could be. You did mention that you spent time in Scotland.
There's been so many.
It's hard to pick one, right?
It's not like I just started 5 years ago and I can remember them all.
Well, you did mention in the pre-interview about working in Scotland and doing research Outlander.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to know how you actually did that. Like, personally, I'd love to spend a year in Scotland. I think it's fantastic. But did you spend your time like going to museums, or what was the, how did you absorb what you needed to absorb there?
Yeah, I went over to Scotland a year ahead of the film actually being greenlit. Mm-hmm. And,
So you weren't on the clock yet. This was your...
Oh, no. This was just me doing... I was obviously, a name like mine, it's background, right? Yeah. So I had always wanted to go there. So, yeah, I just packed my backpack, and the Scottish museum world is phenomenal. They thrive on selling their history. And so I went to the museums, and I would just say, do you have a library of books? And they would say, yeah, what are you looking for? And, oh, we'll go to the basement and pull them all up. And they'd wheel up racks of books for me, which you were allowed to take pictures of. You were allowed to photocopy. They were very, very, very generous in sharing their information. And then, you know, I hopped on every bus tour that I could. And that was a blast, because it was me and then a whole bunch of young people from all over the world. So I asked the young fellas, especially from Asia, I said, why are you here? What's so appealing? Oh, we want to wear kilts and drink scotch. I said, okay, well, that's cool. And then they dropped me off one night at the McDonald Hotel, and I was the only one that stayed there, and they took all the other people somewhere else to stay. And they came to pick me up the next morning, and how was your sleep, Glenn? I didn't sleep a wink. Why? Well, you dropped a Campbell off in the McDonald Hotel. And so that, you know, the bus driver and I were really able to provide the tour. More to the tour. Those kids all got a great tour. Yes.
That's great. And you've been to Guam as well.
Yes, that was for Operation Christmas Drop. And that was just a phenomenal experience. Getting there was phenomenal. Getting home was 30 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
But being there was... It was the culmination of my career, actually, because there I was doing costuming But we were filming on the Anderson Air Force Base.
Right.
So I went, okay, this is it. This is the cherry on top of the icing on top of the cake.
So around all the planes and about and then back in your element of what you're doing. Yeah. That must have been really logistically challenging too. I mean, there's no, probably not a lot of textile shops on Guam. And
well, the producers were smart. We filmed here for 3 days before we went to Guam. So okay. We did prep here. And yes, I was not sure. All they were able to tell me from their scouts was that the largest Kmart store in the world was in Guam. So,
really?
They still have Kmart in that part of the world. So I pretty much prepped most of the costuming here. But of course, we had characters that would be hired in Guam. So, I was able to go to Kmart and pick up things. They do have a Macy's there too, I will say. Wow. It's very small. It's a really mini, but it was a very Americanized town.
But you weren't getting, a drop shipment from Amazon is not going to be there like tomorrow, right?
Yeah. In fact, that brings me to a good story. The production shipped out the whole package, I think it was 2 weeks before we were to start filming in Guam. And, so we had a week off here and then we were to go to Guam and have a week to prep. Well, nobody knew from here, from the brokers and everybody, that all shipments to Guam are priorized to send perishable food first. So our shipment that was sent 2 weeks ahead of when we started filming arrived the night before we started filming because we were very low
on the priority
list.
Oh no.
Yeah. So that was kind of fun.
Did panic set in or did you go back to your 10,000 foot view and go, okay, we can cope. We'll find a way.
Yeah, I've seen ADs change schedules.
And I guess you were in Guam, right? So you just go to the ocean and just stick your feet in the ocean.
Our accommodation was fabulous. It was right on the ocean with a wonderful little swimming area because there was a coral reef out. So the water was warm. It was clear. And that's where we held our department meetings in the morning.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone should go there.
But I want to switch a little bit and move on to your experience with the IA. Because you've been a member for how long now? Maybe I shouldn't.
It's okay. I just received my 30-year pin.
Oh, that's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I didn't wear it. Right. I'm sorry.
Is there anything you want to say just in general about your experience in the industry or?
Well, I do remember that you asked me about skill sets that I felt were important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, again, from 10,000 foot thinking, the skill set that I think that we really use, which other departments may not use as many as ours. Any production managers listening, please pay attention, get your pen and paper out. But of course, we have to use the aesthetic skill set. We need to use technical ability. Communications, as I mentioned earlier, we're speaking with every department. We're speaking with the outside world, the talent. We have to do labor and business management. We are using psychology all the time because, A, there's psychology in colors, but then B, what if you come up with someone who's feeling a character, an actress, actor who's feeling vulnerable in what they are being challenged to do? So we have to help them along. Public relations, as I mentioned earlier, and of course, safety. Everyone thinks, how unsafe can it be in the costume department? Well, we're dealing with chemicals, we're dealing with equipment, we're thrown into hot, hot, hot rooms or trucks with stairs. So we all know that safety is a huge issue. So, I think about other departments and do they have to use all of those sets as much as we do? I'm sure they would argue yes, but I'm here to say no, we use a lot more than other departments.
Mm-hmm. And it's not that every single person is doing all of that at once. So people can find their fit and contribute in each section, right? I mean, obviously as a costume designer, you are overseeing the whole thing, but you have a lot of people that don't necessarily need to deal with psychology all the time, right?
Oh yeah. No, I'm not saying everyone in the costume department has to have this. I'm saying a costume designer has to be able to be fluid in all of these aspects. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. I just wanted to make the distinction. So our listener out there who is going to hear this and go, wait a second, I can't do all those things.
Right.
You can still find your fit. I
think, oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's something to aspire to, because once you've mastered or have some sort of skill set there where you have all of those skills, you're such an asset to production.
Right? Oh, definitely. Definitely. And fluid and can guarantee yourself a lifetime career.
Well, thank you so very much, Glenn, for your time. It's been great to chat with you and learn about your impressive career. And congratulations again on the Industry Icon Award.
I would just like to throw a little promo in for CAFCAD, which is short for the Canadian Alliance of Film and Television Costume Design and Arts. It's an organization that is growing all across Canada. And I highly recommend that anybody in the costume department, whoever's listening to this, takes a look at CAFCAD.com. They hold training events. They hold workshops. They've got a magazine. They have online virtual displays. The membership is growing tenfold daily because there's no particular association with any union organizations. Union organizations are supporting, but it's not about just union work. And I think that it's really going to change things for members in the costume world. I'm seeing huge changes, and it's been growing, and it just keeps growing. Their list is huge of members. So CAFCAD.com.
Well, thanks, Glenn. Thanks for the time. It's been great to chat with you and learn about your impressive career. And congratulations once again on the Industry Icon Award.
And that's a wrap on Apple Box Talks. To get your career rolling in film and TV, check out ourwork.ca.